Just behave yourselves and act like men.
Now you start using your head! That's not love! That's 3 feet above your ass!
People will come, Ray.
All right, don't try to strike everybody out. Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascist.
We don't stink right now.
You play ball like a girl!
You're out of here!
There's no crying in baseball!
High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
This is West Coast Bias.
Dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcast school has really paid off.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, good...
In case I don't see you, good night.
Crepuscular, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Hey, welcome back to West Coast Bias Baseball Podcast. I am Samuel Paul.
I am Adam Nelson.
And, hey, we're back a little bit longer than we were planning on to, but these first 3 weeks of the season have really flown by, haven't they?
Pretty great.
Yeah, pretty
a lot of action.
A lot of action. A lot of wild, weird stuff, which is, you know, what makes this this game so great, or at least part of it. I mean, we had our fair share of controversial calls. We've had a lot of big home runs. We've had a couple of no hitters.
Gonna say yeah,
we've had feral cats. We've had some. Pretty ignoble streaks and some pretty righteous streaks. It's so far so good for the 2021 baseball season, I say.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, that Dodgers series in San Diego was the highlight of my week. That was that was October baseball in April. It was...
Yeah, that's gonna be a really fun series to watch all year long. Because these two teams don't like each other, and they're both expected to do fairly well this year, assuming that they can all, you know, stay healthy.
Well, yeah, wink, wink, Tatis. Now, before I get a little too excited about that, I do feel like in that first series, when we went to extras, went to like the 11th or 12th. And Tatis had like two opportunities to win the game, not just, you know, tie it, but to win. And he failed miserably both, watching strikes go right down the middle, striking him out. First thing I thought was, he's exposed. We got him. I need that sound effect. Ladies and gentlemen, we got him. No, he just did not look. He looked out of his element. He looked outclassed. He looked like he was mind effed, not to get flagged here,
well,
but you know what I mean?
It's no, I
he made an error on defense the next inning. I mean, he was all over the place.
Yeah, I do know what you mean. And you know, I think because of his age, he hasn't had a whole lot of experience in sort of that high pressure playoff juiced atmosphere.
He was in a lot of playoff games last year.
Well, but
I see what you mean. Not like a full season, not
right, and not maybe this quite this level of intensity. I mean, when you have, you know, like you said, October baseball in April.
That's what it seemed like, man. That was,
there's, you know, there's something about pennant race baseball, and even just being in the stands, there is a certain electricity in the air that is quite palpable, and it affects the fans. I know from personal experience, I can't imagine that it wouldn't affect the players. And I think the intensity, you know, can play with someone's head. And, you know, it's a game of averages. So, you know, maybe him looking this poor so early in the baseball season will translate to him actually getting those hits and making those plays come
sound like a Padres
come October.
Fan right now. Wow.
Well, no, I'm not necessarily a Padres fan, as you know, but I'm definitely not a Dodgers fan.
Sure. no, I mean, it bodes well for the Giants too if Tatis can't handle it. Yeah. I mean, playing against the Dodgers is different, especially when you're in San Diego and half of the crowd is wearing blue.
Yeah, we you're expecting it at home, but the home crowd is been invaded by
it's
fans
pretty,
in different colors.
It's pretty bad. Yeah.
It's got to be a
little
bit disoriented.
I almost feel bad for them. sometimes. But I know.
You know, it was very strange too. Then a couple series after, when the Giants played the Padres, and Tatis had that swing and a miss, and then went down and was out for the next like.
No, that was before, days. Right? That was before the Dodgers series, because he came back maybe a little too early for the Dodgers series, because of the excitement and because everybody wanted to see it. But
he wasn't feeling 100%. Who knows?
I mean, is he made of glass? Like, that's what I want to know. Well, I know he swings hard, but doesn't everybody swing hard? And shouldn't you have already figured out your swing? And I mean, I know the swing is a constantly evolving thing, so
it is.
It's not like anybody has it figured out by the time they're 22. But
and he may be made of glass. I mean, who knows? He really has not played a full 162. He was injured.
Right.
He was injured
and I don't
for
think
a
he
couple
ever will.
Months.
I'm honestly wondering if he ever will play a full 162.
Only time will tell.
I know we're playing in different. It's a different era than it used to be. You know, rarely does a guy even play 162 games in a season.
Right.
But a full season.
Yeah, but I mean,
a season without a DL stint or an IL stint. You know, I just don't see that. It's kind of like Giancarlo Stanton. Right.
Yeah.
When all the gears are, you know, in sync with each other, he's one of the greatest hitters on earth, Stanton. Right. And Tatis could be as well. Was the 13-year contract a bit hasty?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it was, certainly was with Albert Pujols, but that notwithstanding, you know, it may go back to new era of training, and less guys are cross training with different sports, different activities, working different muscle groups. So when you do that, it can open yourself up to some weird injuries when you're moving in a slightly different way.
Shouldn't be when you're what is he, 22 years old? I mean,
no,
like that.
But I mean, is Tatis known to have played any other sport than baseball? Has he trained for in any other way except for just baseball?
Well,
I mean,
when you get to this level,
to overtrain.
They don't really let you do anything else though when you get to this level.
Well, at this level, yeah. But I mean, growing up, since he was, you know, however 12 years old in Little League, when he started to show promise, hey, this guy's a really good baseball player, you know, and started training only for baseball.
Yeah. I don't know how they do things in the Dominican Republic. I'm assuming baseball. I mean, I know baseball is king there. But, you know, like here in the States, if you're a baseball player and you're a major leaguer, chances are you were also really good at another sport, basketball, football, whatever. You know, chances are you were just the best athlete in your school.
Right.
So and I would imagine that's more or less true. I mean, obviously out there, I don't know.
Well, but also Tatis Jr. is the son of a major leaguer. And so baseball has been his life from the get-go.
Right.
So, who knows? I mean, it used to be before this, you know, the specialized player era, guys who would play, you know, they didn't make a whole lot of money, so they would have to get a job in the off season, and a lot of times these were physical labor jobs. They'd be swinging an axe or
what's
doing
the,
physical
the,
work.
The pitcher today for the this is Wednesday for this is Thursday for the Diamondbacks. I was just watching that Diamondbacks Reds game before we came on. Widener. He apparently still goes and works at a golf club in the off season and does like physical labor, like blue collar work, because he just likes it.
Yeah, well, and that's
cool.
Good. It is, but back then it was kind of necessity. They needed to keep paying the rent in the off season, so they needed to do something. And that physical activity that wasn't baseball possibly helped them stay healthy for longer stints and not have so many trips to the injured list.
That is interesting, because we're always talking about, and this has been like a long running theme on the show, that are these guys working out too much? And it seems like the question is maybe, but also different workouts might be ideal. And or now with this theory, I mean, this hasn't really been the case for major league players in a long time, I would guess, a few decades.
Since the contract started getting into the millions of dollars.
Right. But even still, you know, I mean, most guys aren't making $1 million a year. I would be willing... I mean, I don't actually know the numbers, but I would imagine most players in the MLB aren't making $1 million a
year. I think the average is around 750. Isn't the minimum? I think maybe the minimum is 750.
No, the minimum is like 2-something, unless it went up. It might be 5 now. Because I know, like, certain players are still only making 500,000 or in change a year. I mean, it's not only, but you know what I mean. It's if your career ends next year, sure, you got $500,000, but you don't have any other real-world skills. Anyway, speaking of daddies, Fernando Tatis, man, Machado is just Trevor Bauer's daddy, right? I mean, he is. I mean, Trevor Bauer has admitted as much. And and it's really fun to see them in both in the same league and in the same division.
Yeah, they're going to have lots of opportunities to have encounters.
I mean, he's already proven against Trevor Bauer this year. I mean, in his career, Machado was hitting .588 off of Bauer. Mm. He has an OPS of 2.078. That would make Barry Bonds giggle and blush. That is pretty. That's
ownage.
That is ownage.
It's ownage. Well, you know, I say, you know, that Machado owes a random Dodgers fan his salary for a year.
That is true. That is 100% true.
And we're going to let him know until, you know, something is done otherwise.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, we already let him know.
I wonder if that fan listens to us. Maybe he can give us a call and we can help him out.
I don't know how to tweet necessarily, but I did tweet that out after the Dodgers won the World Series that night at Machado.
No response yet.
Well, you know, our millions of loyal listeners and fans, I'm sure, are hounding him incessantly day and night. So keep up the good work, guys.
I hope so.
Yeah, I do appreciate that. Now, on Monday's loss to the Rangers, Albert Pujols continued his streak. But what was the streak that he continued?
That's an interesting question. I am not sure about that. Is this
since
2015 consecutive years with a stolen base?
Close. He is 100% for his stolen bases. Yeah. And he just got one the other day. Yeah,
he does. He now has more this year than Mike Trout.
Correct. So I mean, there's only three other guys that have 100% success rate. And it's Kevin Biggio, Lane Adams, Leody Taveras. And obviously Kevin Biggio is still playing. But yeah, he's got 12. Although I did see a difference. This is 13. So it's either 12 or 13. I should know that. I'm speaking on it. But yeah, 100. He's never been caught since 2015.
That's pretty outstanding.
There you go, Pujols.
He's got to earn his keep somehow, I suppose. So he's due to make what $30 million this year? The last year of his contract.
Yeah, he's going to be making $30 million. Yeah, in 2021, and then the reign of Pujols is over. And you were opining and wondering whether or not he would be the next player to hit 700. Home runs.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he's in theory, he's close. He's at what, 644 as of today.
He does have 664 home runs.
664. So he is already passed. So I mean, he's got less than 40 home runs to reach that elusive 700. But
if you were playing next season, I'd give him the benefit. I'd say yeah. Or he might pull up just short like A-Rod. But, you know, if A-Rod couldn't hit the 700 mark, I don't think Pujols could.
Do you think there's a team out there that would pay him $565 a league minimum to be DH for a year?
Yeah, I'm looking right at your t-shirt right now, my good sir. If anybody can make mincemeat of AT&T or Oracle Park, I mean, it's got to be El Machina.
Well, but what about a place like where it's far easier to hit a home run, like Coors or Philadelphia?
Coors, that would be so much fun to see Poole spend his last year at Coors. just to hit that 700 mark. Oh, how awesome would that be?
Get past A-Rod.
Well, it got guys like Kadir and what was his name? You know, guys that like got near batting titles toward the end of their career. You know, I mean, it's pretty cool. Like, why not? You know, throw them in there. I don't hate that idea.
All right. Well, you know, let's start a letter writing campaign to the Colorado Rockies to sign Pujols to a minimum contract to be the designated hitter.
I like it.
Assuming that there will be the universal DH starting next year, which, you know, is a possibility. Whether it's a good idea or not, I have no idea. But if there is,
no, I don't like it. Well, you know, I will say I like it more than the man on second base in extra innings or seven-inning doubleheaders, which is Little League. Seven-inning doubleheaders? Come on, guys.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, though, I heard that that particular aspect of the seven-inning doubleheaders is only while the pandemic is still a thing. And that once all the COVID restrictions are lifted, yeah,
okay,
that then the pandemic is declared over, then it's likely that they'll go back to nine innings.
So 2022 is that what
2022? Well, I mean,
you're saying that could happen mid-season.
Well, I remember a few weeks ago hearing that the governor of this state, Gavin Newsom, said that. Most of the COVID restrictions will be lifted in the state of California
June 15th, right.
Barring any major setback.
Right.
So it could happen.
But would that be fair? Yeah. Could MLB? I don't even know if they could implement a change in the middle of a season like that, where some teams have already played seven-inning doubleheaders. Now would it be fair to now switch it up? And have the other teams whose maybe games were postponed, maybe they got their game postponed pre-rule change, pre-June 15th or so. And that's just California, obviously. So every other state that has Major League Baseball would obviously have to agree to that as well. But then again, I guess if California does it, every other state probably would have already done it, right?
Well, or California would be the first, but... you know, I guess it just all depends, you know, state to state. That's one of the things about this country is that each state does its own thing.
Yeah, no, it's true. But now you just said that Oracle Park, or you inferred that Oracle Park is not a hitter's park anymore.
Well,
but it's certainly more of a
hitter's park than it has been, but. You know, April has always been a good month to hit home runs at Oracle Park. It's because of the weather. The summer weather pattern hasn't really settled in yet, so we don't really have that really thick, strong marine layer most of the time during April.
Well, in every year that I've been here, which is the better part of two decades, it's gotten a little bit warmer. Or at least summer lasts a little bit longer, it seems. I had to buy an air conditioner a couple years ago in San Francisco.
Right.
The horror. I mean, it's pretty crazy. So, you know, warm weather, ball flies more. They brought in the fences. They lowered the fences. And last week, Joey Votto and Mike Moustakas both hit two-run home runs in the top of the first.
Right. And
but wait, there's more. Then Mike Yastrzemski and Brandon Crawford both hit two-run shots in the bottom half of that inning.
Right, and this is the first time this has happened
ever.
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 In any ballpark.
Right.
So I don't know.
Even Coors. Take that, Coors. It's now Oracle Park.
But there have been other times where four home runs have been hit in the first inning,
sure.
Just not necessarily
multi-run home runs. And that Votto splash hit, wow.
And that Votto's splash hit was actually the first time the Reds have been able to get a splash hit. There's the first Reds player to hit one in McCovey Cove.
Really
Is
that true?
I think it is. everything that I looked it up, and it really there has.
They don't have like a lot of big lefties, I guess, over there.
We choose truth over facts.
But what about Duvall? Duvall never hit one over there? That seems
no,
a little.
Apparently not. I mean, it's not easy necessarily to hit one over there unless your name is Barry Bonds. The likelihood is less. There's only a handful of people that have done it more than twice in the history of Oracle AT&T Pac Bell Park.
I've seen quite a few go out during BP there, which is always fun.
Yeah, it's also earlier in the day, and the ball seems always to have flown better during the day than at night.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I don't know. I just remember the very first one that was hit unofficially was Jorge Posada of the New York Yankees. They had come in for the soft opening. They had an exhibition at the in I guess what it was year 2000. Jorge Posada was the first one to hit one in the cove.
It wasn't an official game.
It wasn't official because it wasn't an official game. It was just an exhibition game. Yeah. But
was he batting lefty or righty? Because I know he was a switch hitter.
I'm pretty sure that he was batting lefty.
Yeah, it'd be pretty hard to do otherwise.
I don't know if there has ever been a right-hander to put one in the cove. I know there's been a few people who pushed home runs out that way.
Well, that's
but
a little homework for you for next time.
Yeah,
I will
definitely find that.
Now, do the Giants even keep track of other teams of visiting home
they
runs?
They do. Okay. I do. In my collection of Giants media guides over the years, I have there is a list. They keep track of both Giants splash hits and other teams splash
hits.
Well, that's
good. Is there any other team that has more? I would have guessed not, right?
No, because no other team plays more games there, so they all have less chances anyway.
Right. I guess Barry probably has more than any other team combined.
Oh, absolutely.
I would imagine.
Absolutely. I think Barry still has more than everyone else combined.
Was it in the 40s?
I think.
Or the high 30s?
High 30s for sure. Again, I will get these facts together for
right.
our next podcast here and have that for you and everyone else here listening. So we had what else? We had the two historic. Well, one definitely historic no hitter.
They were.
I mean,
basically one in the same.
Every no hitter is ultimately historic.
Right.
There's only been less than 320 of them in the entire history. So, yeah, the Padres and Joe Musgrove, their very first ever no-hitter. Joe Musgrove from San Diego will never have to buy a beer in his hometown ever again.
It's true. Or a California burrito, for that matter.
Probably.
Or where else they eat out there. I don't really know.
San Diego burritos.
Yeah, they put
the
French
fish tacos.
No, it's a California burrito. They put French fries in the burrito.
Oh, is that what makes
it's a
it
San
a
Diego.
California?
Yeah, it's a San Diego. So or maybe they call it San
Diego.
I don't know.
I think it's San Diego because the burritos that are here in San Francisco are definitely different than the ones
right.
in
but
San
we don't
Diego.
Call them. But we don't call them California burritos here.
No, they're either
mission style,
either burritos
right.
or mission burritos.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah,
real burritos,
right.
The best burritos.
Exactly, yeah. That big old brick that sort of sits in your stomach for a while.
I love it.
Yeah, it's great.
It got me through my 20s.
High school.
That's
hair.
An area of contention: L.A. versus San Diego versus San Francisco.
And who has the best Mexican food?
Yeah. Now, obviously, they're closer down there, so it seems like it should be the best. And I haven't really eaten in L.A. for any significant period of time for the last, like, 20 years. So I'm assuming it's better. Every time I go down there, it seems better. But up here, and I am biased. And this might be the only thing San Francisco I'm biased for. but the Mexican food, pretty damn good, man.
Well,
pretty hard to beat.
You like the mostly non-air-conditioned weather, right?
Yeah, exactly. come for the burrito, stay for the weather. What's
or
crazy,
vice versa.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm not gonna get into it. Now, how weird, though, is that both of those no-hitters, Rodon's and
Musgrove.
Musgrove, thank you. Both were perfect games that were sullied by a hit-by-pitch.
That was quite a little interesting little bit. And
there were only four guys that have ever done that in history, and then we get two in the same week. Right. I mean, you literally go back to 1908. Hooks Wilts. That's a name. I know.
That's a great baseball.
Sounds
name.
Like I'm having
Hooks
a stroke.
Wilts, yeah.
Hooks Wilts, July 4th, 1908. That must have been a hell of a game. And then Lou Burdett in 1960 and Kevin Brown in 97. And then, of course, Max Scherzer's most recent in 2015, who I had in my fantasy team that year, which was great. But yeah, hit by pitch, only the single blemish. But
can you
twice in 1 week? I mean, what are the odds of that?
I don't know. Can you really then call those no hitters? Because someone was hit by a baseball.
You suck, McMahon!
Oh, God damn it. yes. Okay. Now, Carlos Rodon also finds himself in some pretty good company with his no-no, coinciding with a 32-inning scoreless streak dating back to last September.
That's a pretty good streak.
Pretty good streak. Only six pitchers have thrown a no-no in the middle of a scoreless streak that long. Can you name one of them? One of them is
Nolan
probably
Ryan?
Kind of easy. Nolan Ryan? No, sir.
No, okay.
No. No, he gave up some runs. You know, Nolan gave up runs.
Sure. But he did have seven no-hitters. So,
right.
You know,
in four different decades, right? Yeah. One of them is maybe your arch nemesis, or at least your team's.
Is that Oral Hershiser?
No. More recent.
I don't think so. More recent. Clayton.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. he had a 41-inning scoreless streak. Yeah. Cy Young, though, is number one with 45 innings pitched.
Okay, the guy who the award is named after, that makes sense, sure.
Well, I thought you were going to go the more obvious, Johnny Vandermeer, who, of course, is the only pitcher to throw back-to-back or consecutive no-nos.
Sure.
Which is pretty amazing.
It is. No, there's been some impressive streaks over the years. So there's a lot of great names to pick from. This Nolan Ryan was the first name to cross my mind.
Well,
so,
when in doubt, and especially if you're listening to this podcast, just say Nolan Ryan. Or Mike Trout, for that matter. But that's pretty, it's a pretty good company to be in with Joe Musgrove. Now, you know, we like to talk about, we have that game which MLB record will never be broken or whatever. I mean, the Johnny Vandermeer one always seemed like the hardest, but
well,
nowadays it didn't seem nearly as hard as like Cal's record, you know.
Right.
Which just seems like nobody will ever even get within 1,000.
Well, even since now playing a complete, you know, a full season is like not 162 games, it's 154 games just because of the built-in rests now that players are given.
Right. Just routine day of rest.
Right.
That is a routine thing that you see when you're looking to start your players in fantasy, of course.
Right. It's like, why is this player out of the lineup? He's got a game. It's like, he's your best hitter. Why is he not in the lineup?
Yeah, it's been a rocky start to the season fantasy-wise. I've never seen, I mean, well, how are there more guys this season that have COVID than last season in the veritable epicenter and the heart and the beginning and vaccine-free world?
Because
that was the 2020.
Because there are
everyday life.
There is no bubble, and they didn't start playing until August.
Makes sense. All right, moving on. Okay.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but it just as a fantasy manager, it is maddening. I have, I don't know, six guys right now that are either COVID or COVID adjacent, which is basically the same thing because they still have to quarantine.
Right. And there's also some guys that are going on the COVID list for a day or two just because they had effects from their vaccination shot.
Jake McGee.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Giants.
They had a couple pitchers go go on it, and they had to bring up a couple rooks to fill in the gap for those 2 days. One of them looks like he's going to stay with the team for a little while.
Who's that?
This is the Doval. He had never pitched above the Double A, and but he has some pretty electric stuff. a little bit wild with his command, but he's looked pretty stellar to the his last 3-4 games that he's been up. Blowing people away.
Well, as long as Jake McGee gets back, that's all I really care about. I like watching Jake McGee as a Dodger. He's a solid pitcher, and now he was leading MLB in saves up until a couple of days ago, until his little stint on the IL. I'm not sure if he's been surpassed, but he's been lights out. And I want to give a personal thank you to the Giants for not having any blowouts. Appreciate that. You know, if you're gonna win by 3 or fewer, it makes me happy.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting thing about the Giants being currently in second place. But, as of yesterday's, before yesterday's game, the only 4 other teams had scored less runs than the Giants.
And I would imagine they're all in last place or bringing up the rear.
They are. And in fact, the Cubs and the Marlins, the Yankees. And
Tigers or somebody?
Yeah, the Tigers as well.
I mean, the Marlins aren't too bad. They're not in last. They're sitting almost at 500. But I guess the Cubs are too. They're pretty much right there. But Minnesota somehow is in last place in the AL Central. Well, I didn't see that come.
They had a pretty rough series with the A's.
Well, they weren't even playing for a lot of those games.
That's true too. There was some COVID canceled games and some weathered games, and who knows? It's been weird, but how about the A's?
How about them A's?
That's been pretty fun to watch. They lost their first 6 or 7 games and haven't lost since.
Straight 6 straight. Were they 0-5 or 0-6? Yeah,
I know they were 0-6.
It was hard to watch.
It was. They were looking bad, and then something sort of clicked back into place, now 11 in a row.
Yeah, that's great.
And so good. They're only now trailing the Mariners in first place.
They're in first. Yeah, they're 12-7.
They overtook them after last night's game.
I mean, when you win 11 straight, it's pretty hard not to be in first place this early in the season. Oakland's 12-7 sitting Thursday, and then Seattle's 11-7.
Half a game.
Angels with a winning record. Whenever I have a pitcher going up against the Angels, I get really nervous. That lineup is just—it's pretty crazy. Everybody can hit. Rendon's out right now, but
And they've got 2 players that almost have as many home runs as the entire New York Mets. So Shohei Ohtani with 5 and Mike Trout with 6 home runs, and the Mets sitting as a team with 7.
Oof.
So let's talk about rocky starts. But despite that, the Mets have the best winning percentage in the NL East. They've played a few less games than everyone else, but they're
the
in
NL
first
East,
place.
Yeah, the NL East has been very underwhelming so far to start the season, with Atlanta under 500 right now. Ronald Acuña Jr. can't do everything himself, I think obviously the ship will right itself. I imagine Atlanta wins that division, but you never know. Those Miracle Mets are pretty pesky. If Syndergaard comes back, who knows?
Yeah.
Anything can happen.
Well, Miami sitting in third place right now is the only one with a positive run differential. So
really,
they got +4. The Mets are -14. The Phillies are -6. Atlanta's at -1, but Washington down at -20.
Well, that's great for the Giants then. I mean, they're still sitting at +7 right now. So it's not like they're.
yeah,
you know, they're not.
It speaks to their starting rotation right now. They're not giving up a lot of runs, which is good. I mean,
they're keeping them close.
It's a very similar formula as to what was happening in 2010.
Now, for added context, the team right above them, the Dodgers, the Giants have 66 runs scored. Dodgers have 94.
Yeah, with a run differential of plus 38.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, that's definitely the highest in baseball right now. Although the Reds, I mean, their run differential isn't better, but they do have 100 runs scored already.
Yeah, and they've definitely got a live ballpark too. That Great American Ballpark on the river there is
balls like to fly out there.
Yeah, they do. I'm
glad to see Castellanos come back. He served a 2-game suspension for what? For flexing? That was some of the stupidest things I've ever seen. MLB's official response was because he violated COVID protocol by flexing over the pitcher who hit him. I thought that was great. I think that's great for the game. This isn't the 60s, the 70s anymore. This isn't like Nolan Ryan. You know, you get a homer off of him, you know he's going to hit you next time. It's just not like that anymore.
Right.
If there's like specific beef, okay, personal beef or something, fine. Somebody says something nasty, you know, to their face or even online or something, okay, fine. You can have some beef, but there shouldn't be any more beef just for playing the game.
Yeah, you know? or even just celebrating an accomplishment.
Right. And you know, and I know Trevor Bauer is a very polarizing figure. But he's been very consistent with this for a long time, which is like, if you get a home run off of me, pimp it. You know, yeah, great job. You know, if I strike you out, I'm going to celebrate too. You know, like why can't we be friends?
Why can't we express joy on the field? It's like, I hit a home run.
Exactly. Now, if you don't want to, okay, great. Yeah, keep your head down and just run the bases.
There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But like, if you get excited in the moment. Be excited in the moment.
And by the way, if you do that, and then you go like 0-25 afterwards, it's, you know, the joke's on you. So it's like, you know, I get guys like Derek Dietrich and stuff, you know, wearing all these flashy chains and then just standing there watching your ball go out. But I mean, look, as long as you're not slowing down the game, as long as you're not doing anything illegal in terms of gameplay, why not? You know, why does MLB crack down so hard on guys' shoes? You know, on their belts, on their branding of themselves. You know, it just seems so silly. You know, guys like Tim Anderson,
especially since everyone in the league has these, you know, $500 million contracts.
Right.
You know, they need to be able to market themselves, since certainly the league isn't helping market all the players. They're not even helping market their best players, and it just seems backwards that you're gonna behold these guys to some sort of standard that they're not allowed to make money outside of the game.
They should be encouraging these things. This is why Bauer started the Momentum channel and network, essentially. It was for like minor leaguers or even, you know, major leaguers who want to build a brand for themselves, and it's sort of like an outlet for that, because you're not going to play the game forever.
You're not going to play the game forever, and even not even going for like that big endorsement deal with Nike or whomever. It would be like the guy playing because he's good enough, but he has a college degree and wants to, you know, have a name for himself, something to, you know, say, hey, look at me, I'm now in business being a lawyer or you know, being
Ross Stripling is a stockbroker. He passed his Series 7. I mean, he can license you know, he's a licensed broker.
So why can't part of his future advertising campaign and dumbing up business, hey, I used to be a major league player. I you know, have money. I've been able to invest my money and do well, and I want to help you do the same right. too.
Well, and as we all know, especially with the NCAA, a lot of these pro athletes get a garbage education at best. Well, I mean, a lot of it is up to them.
They go to college and they leave if they get drafted after the first or second year, and it's totally a personal choice. There's nothing wrong with it. Certainly, but.
But even when they stay in, you know, and you see this in a lot of football players, and, you know, I've been watching the Brian Gumbel Real Sports, you know, that show going on for years.
Yeah.
And every couple of years, they'll do like a piece on the illiteracy rate in the NFL. It seems like that's even more because schools tend to put way more money into football than baseball or really any other sport.
Sure.
And how these guys they have college degrees. Like, they go for 4 years. Yeah. And they literally read football at a first grade level. It's crazy.
A lot of them, their degree is in football.
Or it's in, like, sports science or some kind of obscure liberal arts degree that is essentially useless if they try to get a job.
Exactly. Most Division I schools... they don't hold their athletes to the same standards as the rest of the student population.
I mean, how could they if you can get a degree without knowing how to read? I mean,
well, yeah,
they're getting pushed along. You know,
they are, and also that also then speaks to how the players are treated and taken advantage of when it comes to contracts and contract negotiations. Because if you can't read. The newspaper, you're definitely not going to be able to read the legalese on any sort of important document that you're going to put your name on.
And the greed from the governing bodies starts when they're in college, and like, you know, because they can't brand themselves, right? I know California did pass the law to where college players can now make money off of their own endorsement, NCAA still doesn't recognize that, and they can still technically, I think, kick you out or give you sanctions or fine you or something. And then when you get to the majors, you still can't do it either. You know, I mean, obviously you can do it off the field, but if you want to wear, like, Trevor Bauer has his little B that he wears, like, on his belt, and then he got a warning, and then the second time it's going to be a fine, you know, maybe like 10 grand or something. How crazy is that?
Yeah, it is totally strange and ridiculous. And if you do have an endorsement deal that is not sanctioned by the league, you can't wear your team colors. You know, I remember seeing the old commercials back in the late 90s, early 2000s with Jeff Kent, but he's wearing a black baseball hat, but there's no orange, there's no SF.
Yeah.
You know, you have to kind of know who he is and who he actually plays for to know, you know what it is, and trying to imply that he's a Major League Baseball player without having that Major League branding sometimes works, sometimes doesn't. I don't know.
Speaking of Major League Baseball's greed, that brings us to this week's Ignoble Award of the Week. Now, we touched on this last week, I wanted to give it to him.
You've been championing this for a couple seasons as well.
But apparently I'm not alone. That's okay, no, so the Ignoble Award is going to MLB.tv and MLB as a whole,
as an entity.
Yeah.
Yes.
In restricting paying fans' ability to watch the great game.
In market game.
Correct.
So, yeah, I mean, on a personal level here, we can't watch the Giants and Dodgers on A's and Giants, right. A's and Dodgers, because we are in the market for those teams. And even if we pay the full price for the subscription to ML.TV, we can watch any other game except those in this market.
Now, I'm assuming this is only for us because we are mere mortals and we're not professional players. But if you're a professional player, surely you'll be able to skirt the blackouts, right?
No. Oh, apparently, a couple weeks ago, Shame. Noah Syndergaard was sitting at home was home early, prepare for the next day's start, and he wanted to watch his teammates play the game, see how they were doing. But MLB.TV said, no, you're in the New York market. You can't watch the Mets. So there's a great quote he put out on Twitter after he figured out that he can't watch the Mets without cable in New York City. And yeah, he said, well, this is bullshit. I guess I'll watch the shitty Pirates.
Dramatization may not have happened.
That's brutal.
It is, but I mean it. I mean,
So the pain is felt by all, is what you're saying.
It really is, and I think it's definitely deserving of this, and does not rule it out for future Ignoble Awards coming. And I think we also, in addition to the letter.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, because it was very difficult to even find an Ignoble Award this week. I mean, I guess, unless you can just consider it the amount of COVID cases for all these players, but
COVID cases. There's also the Conforto leaning into the pitch.
Conforto.
Yeah.
That was a while ago now, but yeah,
it was. But I mean,
but no, you know, it was. But that's a good thing. The fact that it was hard for us to even think of something.
But then,
luckily, Noah Syndergaard came to the rescue to make me not feel as crazy as I usually feel. While trying to watch these games,
it just seems backwards. They want more fans to pay attention. They need to make it easier for more fans to watch the games, especially relevant games to them. If you want to capture the casual fan in, say, Denver, you should allow that fan to watch Rockies games. Because then it's like, hey, I'm enjoying watching the Rockies. Maybe I should get my ass out to the park and you know, drink a beer in the stands.
One would think, you know, on the opposite side of the ignoble, we actually have a Noble Award.
We do this week. This I found this and thought that it was worthy of a mention. And in Atlanta, the city of Atlanta will be taking Hank Aaron's name and replacing a Klan member's name on an elementary school.
Jesus.
An Atlanta school will now be Hank Aaron School.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's great.
It is.
I mean, it might have taken a lot of like public scrutiny, and it didn't come maybe from the goodness of their own hearts without the shame of the national public. But hey,
and losing an All-Star game, maybe, I don't know. We won't get into that at this juncture. Maybe as we get,
but that's
to
but
July,
that's great. But, hopefully, yeah. That's a trend, and hopefully, we do start naming more schools after baseball players. Why not?
Why not?
Because all the old politicians and war leaders and everybody are all getting...
They're all flawed. They all lie. They all do weird things.
Right.
But Hammering Hank,
hey.
He's all around good guy, and everyone loves him, and you know.
I'm all for that. You know, San Francisco's trying to change all the names of the schools. Why don't we just change them all to, like, you know, Joe DiMaggio or Herb Cain? I don't know, right? Just baseball players that come from the area. I mean, then it might be like Tom Brady school or something.
Tom Brady, you know, but
maybe
you know,
I'll backpedal a little bit. But no,
sports heroes definitely make sense as naming for schools and stuff. If you're really looking for someone that can
local
be
figures
rallied around local
you know, guy wins the Nobel Prize.
Joe Montana
or
High School.
Give him a school.
Why not?
Yeah. Presidents are already the president. We don't need to name him after presidents, you know. We don't, you know, good or bad. You know, let's do cool, more relevant people that kids can actually you know, have some
identify
sort of
with.
Yeah, identify with, exactly. Yeah. Nah, what? Yeah. I know that's probably not going to happen, but it's okay. A man can hope. That we're, you know, we're talking about a lot of crazy things that have happened already so far, or at least unusual. But it's not unusual because baseball is, well, always unusual. And crazy things happen. That
at its best, it is unusual, I would say.
But if I've learned one thing from, you know, these deep dives into stats from doing the show for the last, you know, 3-4 years, it is that the one thing that's consistent is that I'm always surprised. There's always a new stat that is shocking, and this is why baseball is so much fun, because you can compare guys from today with yesterday or yesteryear, and by looking at the stats, at least from the live ball era on.
And how do you do that?
With stats. But
which stat are you talking about in particular?
Before we get into that, I want to highlight Randy Arozarena, because, I drafted him a little higher, maybe, in the fantasy league than maybe most. Although, I don't think so. I think I drafted him right around where he should be, and I was happy to get him. But he had his 50th career regular season game recently and hit his 10th career regular season home run. Okay. No, that's not necessarily weird. It's pretty amazing. It's pretty great. You know, those are some great splits, I guess, you know, for a new guy. But it's weird because he also hit 10 home runs in the postseason last October, as you may or may not remember. Who has hit their first 10 home runs in the postseason before they hit 10 in the regular season? You know, I'm not even going to torture you with it. It's never happened, of course.
I was going to say, it's just, how is it even possible?
Exactly. But. Yeah, it's pretty cool. So I'd like to see him continue to rake. That'd be great. He was making me sweat like a maniac during the postseason there. Kind of like whenever Marcell Ozuna got up to bat during the championship series. But Arozarena was such a dirty, such a nasty bat. Yeah, it was... It was fun to watch him, and hopefully he can keep it up. But yeah, that does bring us to a news segment, right? News segment that I think we may have hinted at it last episode. I think we did a little hint on it last week. This is Know Your Stats. Now, we got an email, and this was a few weeks, actually probably a couple months ago now. It was basically... It was somebody was saying, you know, I know WAR is extremely important, and you know, I even use it, you know, to value guys when I'm drafting, but I don't really know what it means, and it's kind of hard to ask the average person because the average person kind of knows,
right?
But not really, because it's not necessarily a new stat anymore.
No, but it is relatively new when. Look back to the history of stats in baseball and used to evaluate players, you know, the big three being, of course, ERA, home runs, and RBIs.
Well, no, I mean, it would be batting average.
Well, batting average.
More than RBI. Well, RBI wasn't even really a stat until, like, the 1920s or so.
But right? but the batting
average. Arguably a very unimportant stat, but continue, sir.
Yeah, but, I mean, these were the tools that people used to evaluate was just straight the batting average.
Right. Batting average, hits, runs, home runs. Yeah. Right. On base percentage, sure.
On base percentage is also would be relatively new.
And championed by Billy Bean, I guess, right? I mean, among other people.
Yeah, sure.
Given immediate results with the A's winning streak, which we're currently in the middle of right now, which
right? Their longest since that Moneyball A's era when they won 20.
Yeah. So now WAR, you know, we use it because it is the best way to measure players from today and yesterday.
Right. Compare different eras.
Yeah.
Because.
But why? Why is it a good tool?
Exactly. Well,
and that's what we're here to disseminate.
So let's start with the basics. WAR is wins above replacement.
Right. And so, replacement player. Sometimes you'll see WARP, WARP. I believe Baseball Prospectus uses that. Now, WAR is a constantly evolving equation that is used as a framework, more or less, to understand how much better a player is than a player who would typically be available to replace that player. The average... replacement. That's the R, right?
So let me, before we get into the nitty-gritty of the details of this, let me run this scenario by you and see if I'm off base here. To my understanding of WAR, and basically what it means is it indicates the number of wins that a particular player would generate for their team over the course of a season or a career.
Yeah. In a nutshell, yeah.
So in a nutshell, so a practical application of this for projection purposes, I can take just from last year's season with the San Francisco Giants and Buster Posey. Buster Posey has an average...
Well, he didn't play last
year. He did not play last year, but he has an average war of 4 wins per season.
Really?
The Giants last year finished less than 4 games behind the last wild card winner. So if Buster Posey with his average war had been in the lineup last year, the Giants would have won 4 more games and made the playoffs.
Giants make the wild card. Correct.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Okay.
I mean, that's pretty much right on it. Now, it basically starts by comparing a player to the average in a variety of venues. Then comparing the theoretical replacement player to the average player, and then you add the two results together. Everybody does it slightly differently. By everybody, I mean all the different stat sites.
Right.
Slight differences. So there is no one way to determine WAR, but it is such a convoluted and detailed equation,
right,
that they're all basically pretty close. It's presented with decimal points because it essentially relates to the value back attained by runs contributed. And so, like you're saying, it counts as a win, but in a sense, one win is roughly 10 runs. So, okay. Yeah, that's another way to look at it like that. But yeah, you're right, 100%. A guy like Posey, if he gets 4 WAR, which in 2019, he had, what did he have? He had 2.8. But the year before that, he had 4. The year before that, 4.9, 5.9, 5.1, so and so on. So yeah, it stands to reason that they have him in the lineup. They're not really whoever replacement catcher, was it Ruff? No, not Ruff. No. Bart. Joey Bart, I guess, right?
Yeah.
I doubt he had even a 1 WAR. So yeah, arguably speaking, Posey's in there, gets 4, Giants make the playoffs. Position player WAR obviously differs from pitcher WAR, but then you can combine the two. But for today, just talking about position player WAR.
Okay.
It's, at least for baseball prospectus, the calculation contains 6 main components, of which each component is derived with a myriad of conditional stats. But so the 6 are batting runs, base running runs, runs added or lost due to grounding into double plays in double play situations, fielding runs, positional adjustment runs, and replacement level runs based on playing time. So the first 5 measurements are all compared against league average. So a value of 0 will equate to league average, and less than 0, worse than average, and greater than 0 means better than average. Pretty simple. But just, I mean, because that's a lot to just throw in right
there. Yeah, there's a lot to unpack just in that.
Because in each of those 6, there is, I mean, you know, it's very detailed. So just as an example, to see how sort of detailed and complex each of those are, batting runs, for example, takes into account called strikes, differentiates between infield singles and outfield singles, differentiates between strikeouts and other outs, ROEs or reached on errors, runs due to stolen bases and caught stealings, which are actually subtracted from the batting total but added to the base running total, and so on. It's so people that are saying, oh, like, what, you know, what's WAR good for, you know, like how good is it really at measuring? It's like, well, it's kind of the greatest tool we've ever had or developed.
Yeah, it's certainly the most comprehensive.
Definitely the most comprehensive.
Because it does factor in so many variables, including where they play, who they play against.
Exactly. Where, you know, the quality of team, quality of opponents, the calculations for base running runs alone literally takes into account not just singles or hits to the outfield, but singles, doubles, triples to each individual outfielder. And if they were held or advanced from each individual base. I mean, you know, it kind of makes your head spin, and it makes me happy to know that there are people much smarter than me out there who can figure all this out.
Well, I think they're using the computers to help as well.
Well, Bill James, you know, is more or less created this like in the 70s and was doing it on his own, you know, just like all a fantasy sport. Imagine doing fantasy without computers. It's just, it actually hurts. My eyes start to bleed just thinking about it. But so
a simpler time.
Yeah, I mean, I know that was like a long-winded explanation, but that sort of gives you an example of just how meticulous and detailed and thorough a stat like offensive war is, and how easily relatable and comparable it is to, you know, somebody from the 60s. Roberto Clemente to Mookie Betts.
Now, going to that, though, there are a lot more stats that are tracked these days than there had been in the past. Is there a level of information available for people from the 60s or the 40s or the 30s?
Well, yeah, because the games are still scored the same way, and so you can go back and retroactively essentially recompute everybody
just from the scorecards. Yeah. you can determine what and just replay the games and see what the situations was, so you can legitimately,
because you know what happens,
someone like Babe Ruth to Mike Trout.
Yeah. 100%. You know, pre-live ball era, it gets a little bit different, stickier, just because obviously, you know, it was kind of a different game.
Sure. Yeah.
So virtually every one of these comparisons are from the modern era, the live ball era, essentially. But yeah, there's no, I mean, and again, this is a constantly evolving tool, so they're constantly tweaking it and they're making it better to, you know, more, I guess, correct. I don't know.
More accurate.
Yeah. And precise, maybe. Yeah, exactly. And it's just a nice way to do that, to look back. And because, unlike, you know, football or, you know, basketball for that matter, you know, the rules of baseball haven't really changed in the last 100 and, you know,
at least
20,
not in
30
a
years.
Significant way.
No, only in the last, you know, 5-6 years have you seen like these bigger rule changes, with the exception of, you know, the DH in the 70s. You know, affect the game, you know, 3 batter minimum, you know,
7-inning double.
Yeah,
headers.
Mound visit limits, but those aren't really changing the game, like goaltending in basketball or, you know, roughing the passer in football and, you know, stuff like that. Essentially, like Joe Montana probably could have been Tom Brady, right? If he never got hit,
right?
Or Steve Young, even for that matter.
Yeah.
But so it's hard to compare guys in football when, if you had one guy that was 300 pounds in the 80s, that was a big deal. Now every guy's 300 pounds.
Right.
Now in baseball, the guys are bigger and stronger, but the game is still just as hard.
Right. Well, and it's the same set of rules.
It's the exact same rules.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
In the football, not only are the guys bigger and faster overall, they're playing ultimately almost a complete set of rules. The basics are the same, but the nuances are almost completely different.
Even just something that, you know, that's fun to watch, like an onside kick, now is basically impossible in the NFL.
It would seem so. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so, and the 3-point shot in basketball, you know,
yeah,
I mean, that's a big change, and that's not even that long ago, you know?
Right.
And so when you can you compare Steph Curry to Pistol Pete? I mean, I guess, but you know, it's not. But you can compare Mickey Mantle to Mike Trout.
Right.
And you really can do a one-for-one comparison.
The similarities are fairly remarkable.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And some of the ballparks are still around. Not all of them, but some of them are. You know, the ones that they both played in.
One, for sure. But,
well, Dodger Stadium, Cubs. I mean, I know, I guess the Mick probably didn't really play
definitely played in Boston.
Yeah.
At Fenway is definitely still around.
Yeah.
and in theory, Yankee Stadium
is in spirit.
It's different orientation, different airflow, so it's got a different character to it, but the dimensions are in theory the same.
Now, before we get into the trivia, I wanted to just touch on,
there's a number of different variations of war that you see. You see the B war. And various other little letters in front of the WAR. I don't know if that's what you want, if you want to touch that on this week or next week.
Yeah, I don't want to. Yeah, it's I'm just giving like a brief rundown of the generality.
I think that really helps. It is an interesting stat. It is something very interesting to and a great tool to be able to look at and to compare players of this era to each other and of different areas to really can spark some really good debates.
Well, and it also I think helps to
quantify
and legitimize these $300 million contracts, $400 million contracts. People say, how could the Phillies give Bryce Harper $360 million, wherever it was, for like 13 years? Well, when you look at it like that, it's like, okay, he's getting about 20-something a year. If he can give you six wins, would you not want that guy on your team at the end of the season? If you're playing in a tough division and you get six extra wins, or a guy like Mookie, it's like putting up eight or nine, you know, like nine wins is the difference between first and second place every year.
And speaking of Bryce Harper giving you a win, he got one
yesterday against
the Giants.
A little line drive home run against the Giants.
Line drive home run to tie it up, and then he ended up scoring the winning run.
Yeah, that's a win. You know?
So, yeah.
So, like, even though a guy like that is so polarizing, and I'm glad he's not a Dodger, although I don't know why the Giants should have snagged him. They should have done whatever they could to get him.
Yeah.
Even if he's hitting 255, if he's putting up six war, it's worth it. It's worth that, like, $18, $19, $20 million a year, whatever he's getting paid, you know. So, I don't know. Because people freak out when they hear those numbers, but when you break it down, they're pretty
freaky numbers. But
it's nice to have that value. Now, a guy like Tatis, who knows? Because he is really unproven.
All right,
he had a pretty good stretch there, but anyway, a guy who I thought was proven and who's been letting me and a lot of other fantasy managers down is Keston Hiura. What happened to Keston Hiura?
I don't know.
I mean, in 2019. 2019, he came in as a rookie, batted .303, .368 OBP, .570 slugging over 84 games. That's 115 DRC plus, which is another runs created weighted stat that we'll get into in the future. But, so he looked great. He looked like he was going to be, Milwaukee's second baseman with power, with average, with speed. You know, he was stealing bases in the minors. He looked great. I had him. I picked him up that year, 2019. He helped me a lot. I think I got second place that year. I didn't win. It was a sad year. But anyway, he was fun to watch, right? 2020.
He was. I mean, I actually have him on my team this year.
Yeah,
I don't know what happened to him.
You know as well as I do how hard it is. So in 2019, though, even with those great numbers, he struck out about 30% of the time. And if that wasn't a portent of what to come, I don't know what else would be. Because in 2020, and now obviously 2020 wasn't the best measure of a player.
Only it's a smaller sample size than what we usually get.
And it's not a normal season. Okay, but his strikeout percentage actually went up 4 points. And he led the league in strikeouts with 85. Led the league in strikeouts. He came into this week with a strikeout rate over 35%.
Yeah.
So you wonder what happened.
22 strikeouts through 15 games. Yeah.
That's bad. You know, the good folks over at Baseball Prospectus think it might have something to do with what they call his Z contact rate.
Z contract?
Contact. Z contact? Yeah. Well, which is the percentage of time a batter makes contact when swinging at a pitch in the strike zone. Which is really, it's a great tool to use, especially when you want to predict maybe a guy. And you need a bit of a sample size, you know, 1 or 2 years, 3 years, to sort of understand why maybe a guy might be slumping, or to predict a regression coming up. Now, the worst Z contact percentage since 2008 is Joey Gallo in 2015 with a Z contact percentage of 55.9. But in 2021, so far, in 56 plate appearances, Keston Hiura has a 59% Z contact percentage. That means he's not even making contact 41% of the time in the zone when he's swinging. Not just like he's watching them go by. He's swinging at these pitches in the zone, missing it 41% of the time. It's by far the highest in baseball currently. League average is 82.5%.
Yeah,
he's at 59%.
So there's something going on there. What is it? Is he trying too hard? Is he pulling his head out at the last minute?
No, it's his pitch recognition. It's just not as elite as I think we all thought it was. And
or maybe they figured him out and they're fooling him a little bit.
Well, either way,
to make the adjustment.
Either way, I mean, you know, obviously guys get a regression usually after their first season because the league figures them out, or at least learns how to pitch to him. You see Jonathan India right now with the Reds. Like, yeah, got off to a great start. And now they're just pitching him outside. And he's striking out and he's getting out. And that was a pretty quick learning curve. But, you know, with Keston Hiura, it just seems like he's really just not recognizing these pitches.
Just missing them.
Yeah, and perhaps the most damning of these struggles is with the fastball, which you should not be missing. You know, since his debut in 2019, he is the second worst player when it comes to Z contact percentage against the four seamer and the two seamer and cutters. They usually lump in cutters. 70%. He's only hitting 70.5% fastballs in the zone when he swings. Not good.
No, the league average is much, much higher.
Well, yeah, the league average of any pitch in the zone when swinging is 82%.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, fastball, I mean, you know, usually that comes with age. Usually, you know, you see a guy like Joey Votto even right now. You know, he's not hitting these fastballs that he usually did, or at least he's not hitting them square, you know. He rarely ever flies out in the infield, but he does get a lot of outfield flyouts, and it's generally because he's a little bit older, bat speed's a little bit slower. But this shouldn't be happening with a guy like Keston Hiura. Unless he just really isn't seeing these balls. And if that's the case, which, it, you know, these numbers kind of show, that's scary. You know, I really like this stat because Matt Olson is another guy. He's right behind Keston Hiura at 70.6. Now, of course, Olson had the grand slam the other day and went yard yesterday and is looking pretty good. But, you know, he's generally has a low batting average. And he's a guy that I don't love to take in fantasy drafts because I know his average is going to be nothing. Yeah, he'll hit for power, but it's, you know, when I look at these stats, it makes a lot of sense with me. Now, Keon Broxton is in a league of his own with 60%. It's pretty bad. It's really bad, actually. But yeah, Keston Hiura is right there. And, you know, are we going to see him in a starting job, you know, come the end of the season at second base? I don't know. I mean, they might have to send him down.
We'll see, yeah. Because
that's pretty damning. You know, those numbers are really bad.
So isn't this up to hitting coaches and the man himself to be able to correct this? And it's hard to do at the major league level to make these adjustments.
Yeah.
Because just generally, the quality of competition is just so high.
Right. Yeah, it's tough. I mean, we'll be on a Keston Hiura watch for the rest of the season. But, yeah, I know the fantasy managers out there are not happy. But that just sheds a little light. So if you're thinking about trading him or dropping him, I mean, you probably won't drop him. But trading him might be a good time. Because unless he dramatically figures something else out, the trend seems to be he's only going to be swinging more and missing more. Right. So it might be a good time to dump.
Right. Maybe I'll need to offer him up for trade before this actually hits the airwaves, huh?
Yeah, don't offer me. I'm not taking him.
Well, I know that other members of our league listen in. So the cat's out of the bag. I won't be able to trade him now. You know what I like.
All right, that brings us to last week's trivia question.
Last week's trivia question, yes. We had a good one. Did we, if I remind everyone here.
Last week's trivia question.
Nolan Ryan. Second time his name has come up this podcast.
Second or third, yeah.
So
par for the course.
He only gave up one walk-off home run in his career. Who was the hitter to hit it?
Who was the only player to hit a walk-off home run off of Nolan Ryan?
Yeah, did we get any answers this time?
Yeah, we got, let's see, Taylor S. in Rancho Cucamonga says, gotta go one strikeout king to another, Reggie Jackson.
Oh, interesting. It is. I like that. No, but that is not correct.
Interesting.
Yes.
All right. We got Marcus in San Francisco says, wild guess, but Don Mattingly.
Don Mattingly, another strong guess.
Donnie Baseball.
But no, not Donnie Baseball.
All right. Let's go. We got Neil in Petaluma says, I'm thinking someone with a, sorry, I can't read, with a high average, Wade Boggs.
Mm.
Ooh.
Another good one. I mean, these are all players that would be in the, in the era, but no, the Boggs is not correct either. It sounds like no one actually got my hint that I dropped too, that this was very West Coast related.
Yeah, even I didn't.
I mean,
that
we're West Coast bias question on this one for sure.
That's a big hint. Geez, I'm just looking at Boggs' numbers in the 80s. He won batting titles in 83. 85, 86, 87, 88. Jesus.
Yeah. No, he was a good one for sure.
A fantasy monster. He only hit under 360 once.
Yeah.
When he hit 357.
Yeah, no, he was a great hitter.
Interestingly though, 84 is Don Mattingly, so hey.
Yeah.
So okay, so I'm thinking
Yankees Red Sox rivalry, you gotta have a little bit of that.
So this probably isn't somebody that it's probably not an obvious choice.
It's not an obvious. Is that what I'm thinking? It's not an obvious choice.
Like a Pedro Guerrero. This
player is not in the Hall of Fame yet, and probably won't be in as a player.
I don't know. What do you get? Tommy Lasorda. Tony La Russa.
Tommy Lasorda, that is a funny guess. No,
you don't even know.
No,
oh
no. It was San Diego Padres great, Bruce Bochy.
Really?
The manager of the San Francisco Giants. Yeah. He was the only player to hit a walk-off home run against Nolan Ryan. There are a couple of interviews out there where he talks about that. I don't think that Nolan Ryan has ever talked about it. Especially then looking back at it and thinking back to the Giants' win over Texas in the 2010 World Series, where Nolan Ryan was there as one of the owners of the Rangers. I'm sure he wasn't very happy looking across the dugout and seeing Bruce Bochy and Will Clark, two people that he was definitely probably not fans of anyway.
That's right. Will Clark famously had his first at bat off of Nolan Ryan and hit a jack
over dead center field at the Astrodome, and hit the most home runs against Nolan Ryan than any other player.
And then went outside to find his car tire slashed with a.
I don't know about that. I don't, but he definitely got the silent treatment from Nolan Ryan when. Playing for the Rangers late in his career.
July 1st, 1985, Bruce Bochy hit a 10th inning walk-off home run off of the Astros for a 6-5 win. For the record, Bochy hit 26 career home runs.
Right.
And three walk-offs.
Hey.
Including three walk-offs, I should say. Pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, for
basically Mr. Walk-Off of the home run. You only hit 26 in your life. One of them's off Nolan. and the other two were walk-offs. I mean, that's pretty good.
Some bragging rights right there.
Here's a quick tidbit on that game, though, here.
Okay.
Nolan Ryan had a 5-3 lead after seven innings. Gave up a run in the eighth. Gave up a run in the ninth. Gave up a run in the tenth to lose the game. Could you imagine that happening today? Could you imagine a manager?
There'd be no way that any pitcher would still be in there in the 10th inning, let alone after giving up a run in the 7th inning to cut your lead down to one.
It's a different game.
Totally different
game. Perhaps the craziest thing about that, and I'm looking at Baseball Reference right now, that 10-inning game lasted only 2 hours and 25 minutes. A different world.
Wow.
That wasn't even that long ago. Wow. That was 35, 36 years ago.
I remember 1985. Sure.
Crazy.
Yeah.
To live in a different world. So, now, what do you got for me this week?
Well, this week, you know, I was struggling to find an interesting question. I had found one regarding recently retired Jay Bruce and a rather exclusive home run club, but I thought that you had
a little farewell to Jay Bruce. That's good. He deserves it.
So I thought you had a more compelling question than I did this week.
Sure, yeah. Jay Bruce, over 300 home runs in his career, sitting at a 20 lifetime WAR, which, you know, you generally have to have 70 to get into the Hall of Fame, but you never know. This week's trivia question: which team did Jay Bruce hit a walk-off homer against to clinch the NL Central title for the Reds in 2010?
It is a great question, and I would say, you know, off the top of my head, I don't know, because 2010, I was watching the Giants clinch against the San Diego Padres, and a very exciting end of the season.
Which team did Jay Bruce hit a walk-off homer against to clinch the NL Central in 2010? Remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at West Coast Bias BB, or Podomatic website. Leave a comment. You know what to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And please do let us know about any cool promotions that you see happening.
That's
and,
right.
And what other stats would you like to find out more about?
Yeah.
We can help everyone upgrade their understanding of this of this great game and some of the numbers that are thrown around these days.
That's right. Yeah. Let us know.
Does that
questions, comments, observations about life in general as pertains to baseball. From San Francisco, California, I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul. And remember, baseball is life. The rest, just details.
Go watch some baseball.